Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples and the Squamish-speaking peoples, and this episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples and the Halkamalam-speaking peoples. At Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original knowledge keepers and storytellers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie. It's been a hot minute since a new episode of Typically Tuesdays. You'll have to forgive me there. You know, a lot was happening in my life, and as per usual, mental illness. Haha. Highly do not recommend anybody ever develop mental illness. It is painful, horrible, and legitimately disabling. But the show must go on. I am going to talk about a small topic and then a larger topic today. First, I'll be doing a little bit of a follow-up episode of my last show, which was about ChatGPT, or I think it's OpenAI's usage of Studio Ghibli copyright intellectual property, and the response kind of that has stoked in a lot of people, including a really cool viral art trend that has come out of it. And in the second part of the show, I'm actually going to do a show review. It's going to be the first one that I've ever done, but I really wanted to talk about Parallel Reflection, which was Emily and Miu's final concert, Emily and Miu from Non-Sweet. If you want to know more about that, you're going to have to tune into the archived episodes on Typically Tuesdays from a few weeks ago, where Sam and I talked to Emily and Miu and the other members of Non-Sweet about Parallel Reflection. But I'm looking forward to share my thoughts, because I can't help but to feel like it was a pretty unique experience. So you're going to be hearing all about that later on. For now, we're going to listen to some music. On the playlist, I was trying to maybe go for like, music about technology and love? In the end, I don't think that that really tracked. But we got a lot of new tracks coming up on this hour. Actually, most of it is new CanCon. We've got some webpage 505. We have Ribbon Skirt coming up later. We've also we've got some older stuff as well with Tallies, off of their very first full-length album, Tallies. But for now, this one's exciting. This one is by Backwash, and if you know me, I've been itching to play Backwash on the show for years and years and months and months, because a lot of it cannot be played on daytime radio. But I'll take anything that I can get. Here's Backwash off of her latest album, Only Dust Remains, Ninth Gate.
Yeah. Space Invader, tech producer, screen saver. This is Bird Note. Weather in the Arctic is still wintry when male snow buntings return to nesting areas in April. They've spent the winter roaming shorelines and fields of grain stubble, cold, windswept places in the northern United States and Canada. Males reach their breeding territories on the tundra a month ahead of females and defend them relentlessly. This means male snow buntings may face freezing conditions and snow blanketing the ground. But there's a big benefit to arriving early enough to claim a prime nest cavity in a rock face or under boulders, where it will be safer from foxes and snowy owls. Nesting in chilly rock cavities means extra care must be taken to keep eggs and nestlings warm. That's why, unlike many other bird species, female snow buntings never come off the nest. The males bring them food, giving them more continuous time on the eggs. This shortens the incubation time, improving the odds of hatching a healthy brood. And it all begins with an early, if somewhat cold, start to the season. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
We're back here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie, and a few weeks ago you might have heard me talk on and on about the detriments of OpenAI and ChatGPT and the outrage that came out from the fact that OpenAI had new updates to allow for people to create images that looked like they came right out of a Hayao Miyazaki film. Now, the response to this upgrade of OpenAI, as you know, has been intense, to say the least. A lot of people are talking to their friends and family about the detriments of using OpenAI and AI generative tools. Are they tools? I guess I can call them tools. In response, even mainstream media has started to report a little bit about it, talking about all the ways that perhaps Studio Ghibli would be able to stake a copyright infringement lawsuit on OpenAI. Now, I think that conversation is... it's interesting because while I think a lot of people who maybe have good intentions, but who maybe themselves aren't artists or aren't people who are very close with artists, something that they might fail to grasp is the fact that, you know, with the resources that Studio Ghibli has and the resources that Hayao Miyazaki has, yes, they can potentially go move forward with a copyright infringement claim on OpenAI. The issue, of course, being what about all the other independent artists out there whose work are constantly being stolen, even without a new upgrade on OpenAI. There are a lot of social media platforms right now that are without our consent, without our explicit consent anyways, are taking our likeliness, the drawings that we post online, and using them to generate AI, using that as data to create, to allow for people to create images that look a particular way or have a particular feel to it. And that can be incredibly disheartening for people who are, you know, not regularly contracted, who are not permanently hired to like a film studio such as Ghibli or even like an animation studio. As you may or may not know, the world of animation being a creative industry, it is not always one that is like financially very secure in a lot of ways. And so for people who are actually in that industry, many folks are, they are contractors, they're independents, and they don't necessarily have the resources or the means to go after a legal case in the way that mainstream media might be projecting that Studio Ghibli will go after OpenAI. And it's a bit of a shame, you know. It is really difficult when I see my artist friends, people who are full-time or part-time artists who are making art for their livelihood. They really already struggle against the algorithm on social media, and they already have quite a bit of trouble when they aren't getting enough views, meaning that they might not be getting as much exposure, not enough attention on their work that people can purchase. But the probability of having their work stolen as well by these powerful billionaires is heart-wrenching. You know, you put in all this work to hone your craft and to hone your skills, and not only do people not acknowledge that, but they blatantly take it from you. Sometimes not even with that intention in mind, they just do it. A very interesting trend has come out of this, instead though, in which artists are creating illustrations of them as though they were like a little action figure, in like a plastic casing and everything. They've got accessories with it. It says, and on the packaging it will say, no AI included in the creation of this product, or something like that. It's a fun little trend that has been picking up steam. I've been seeing my artists' friends get involved in it, but even illustrators from actual, like, pretty successful companies such as Trixie Cosmetics are participating in it, and it's kind of exciting to see that. I remember, you know, when I was younger, looking at digital artwork on social media, and that was these kinds of like trends, these sort of what they used to call like tag memes and stuff. They were very, very popular, and I think for quite a while, maybe they weren't as I didn't see them as commonly as before, because maybe trends were just shifting and changing so quickly that there wasn't a chance for a lot of people to keep up with making these illustrations, and also maybe people were too busy kind of you know, marketing themselves, putting their work out there so that people can, so that it can catch attention, so that they could, you know, get hired, or, you know, people can buy the artwork that they make. But to see this kind of trend come up is very exciting. If you've seen any of those before, you know, you'll understand what I'm saying, when you just notice how clever it is, how people are using this idea to describe themselves as a person, but to also make the statement that they are not an artist that stands for this kind of blatant data mining and these kind of disturbances to their creative freedoms, which is really, really quite cool. Again, shout out to the independent artists out there that are doing the good work, resisting every day, honing their crafts, getting better ever more, even when there's an art block that they experience. I salute you in what you do. And if you are not an artist, or if you are a hobbyist, you're looking to purchase some nice gifts for your friends, or put up some nice decorations where you live, consider purchasing artwork from a local artist at like an artist alley or at a convention, and support your local artists in that way. That is one of the best ways that we can continue to encourage people to keep up their craft. That said, I am interested to see where possibly this whole thing with OpenAI and Studio Ghibli could go. If there will potentially be a lawsuit. There's nothing out there that says that there will or will not be one yet. People are just kind of speculating, but I do know that there has already been quite a bit of work being done in other sectors of the creative industries, such as in journalism and in film, where more of that stuff is being discussed. There are more avenues around creator ownership that are trying to be carved out, and you know, if there are realms that allow for creatives to maintain ownership in their work, that is that's potentially something to look forward to, I guess, to see just how that goes, because you know, it's been a few hundred years, right, since the Industrial Revolution, where, you know, it's just a lot harder for creatives to maintain ownership of their own work, and also to continue to sustain themselves in their daily lives through being an actual working artist or craftsman, gender-neutral craftsman. Alright, anyways, we're gonna listen to some more music right now, and after that, I'll be talking about Parallel Reflection. Here's a Ribbon Skirt with Wrong Planet. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. You just heard Koolfy Girls with Red Light off of their debut record, Divinity. I've been really enjoying that track, and Wrong Planet by Riven Skirt, of course, which you've heard before that. And I am just slightly ashamed to say, as we were on the topic about like algorithms and social media, actually I found out both of those musicians on social media and on Instagram specifically. I'm sorry, you know, I personally feel a little bit embarrassed to admit that, but just know that you get the solace and also bragging rights to know that you did not have to be exposed to those two cool bands through the algorithm. You did it through community radio instead. And I'm proud to say that I was the enabler. I guess that's all I can really say about that. But yeah, two really cool albums, Bite Down by Riven Skirt and Divinity by Koolfy Girls. Go check them out if you're into like some like hard punky stuff. For now, I think it's time for me to talk about Parallel Reflection. I mentioned earlier this was going to be a show review, and I lied. I know really nothing about live music and live performances, but I do know that I have thoughts. And as I've been reflecting on my experiences at Parallel Reflection, I just wanted to share some things, I guess, because I've been talking about idols incessantly on this program for many years, and I had this revelation. I'll get to that in a little bit, but oh boy, it was a whirlwind of a performance. Parallel Reflection was Non-Sweet's graduation concert for Emily and Miyu. They held it last weekend at the Anza Club. I went with Sam, and it was a beautiful concert. It was amazing. Emily and Miyu came out in their like Parallel Reflection outfits, and they were so cute. I love the detailing on their outfits. They were both kind of like, as in the name, as you might have caught it a few weeks ago if you listened to Typically Tuesdays when Sam and I had interviewed Non-Sweet. But if you haven't, that's in the archive right now over at cjsf.ca. You can check it out. They came out in these outfits, and they were like kind of matching but sort of not really. Similar length. This is horrible. I think that, like, in my brain, they're matching because I know very little about fashion. But they looked cute, and they looked kind of like kind of like opposites, in the sense that, like, Emily was, like, very cute and fluffy, you know, wearing this, like, white, kind of, like, knee-length, big fluffy dress. She wore like this thing on her back. I have no idea what it was, but it was like these, like, this cutout of like angel wings, I think. And then Miyu in her like all black, also very frilly, cute, big fluffy dress. It was kind of more gothic. And she's wearing this kind of like gothic little bonnet. And they're both wearing these gigantic shoes. So good. And so nice. It made the two of them stand out so much, especially because all the rest of the Non-Sweet members wore like kind of like just a plain concert tee, which was really fun. The show started with an acoustic version of their beloved banger, By Your Side, and that's like the moment that it started. We're like watching in the audience, watching each member of Non-Sweet come out and trying to get through their lines without getting too emotional. And it's a total gut punch just watching them kind of hold back tears. And then the rest of the concert was Emily and Miyu and the rest of the members performing whatever songs Emily and Miu wanted to perform. That was stuff like Grapefruit Moon by Wasta for Miu. There was a group number and she was the main performer in it. She was center. Then there was Kimito Boku no Uta by Not Equal Me, which is Emily's favorite J-pop idol group. And similarly to when they were performing Miu's favorite idol group song, Emily was the center performer for Kimito Boku no Uta. Then there were solos, there were duets, and there were group numbers. Their manager, Kenzie, also came out to perform, and I would have never expected it. I actually haven't watched Nansweet perform very much. I hadn't many opportunities to see them live, but I would have never expected that Kenzie is such an amazing performer, actually. She came out during one of Emily's numbers. They were doing a duet, and oh my god, the entire audience erupted in cheers. You're like screaming and flailing around. It was so cool. Who would have thunk that this group not only had five incredibly skilled performers, but also that their manager is an incredibly skilled performer as well? It's kind of wild. But that happened. And after the performances, the rest of the evening was about, you know, the meet and greet, where people were basically like lining up right out the door to share their final, you know, words of thanks and support for Emily and Miu, and also to the other members of Nansweet. And you know, as I was watching these performances, and reflecting on them, I couldn't help but to realize that, oh my god, in Vancouver, I have had the full idol fangirl experience. And I never would have expected that. You know, I've been a fan of idols since I was really quite young. And because most of the idols who I had followed for most of my life, they were all situated in a different country, and we're literally an ocean apart. There's a language barrier and a cultural barrier there. I never expected to be able to go to live performances, let alone go to a graduation concert. Everything that I've done in my like idol fangirl life, I've done from afar, right? I've fallen in love with groups from afar. I have supported them from afar. I have said farewell to them from afar, you know, watching either like ripped live streams on the internet, or watching or like furiously updating social media to see like live updates. So I never would have thought that I would get to have that full idol fangirl experience in Vancouver for a group that is so Vancouver. From the moment that I got into Nansweet, the first moment that I like saw them live, to when I started to get into this group, to even like listening to their music, and even being able to work with them for Typically Tuesdays, all of it has kind of come out of this maybe not so spectacular, not so dream big dream. And then the graduation concert all wrapped it up so neatly. I remember being quite young and loving Girls' Generation. They were like the first idol group that I like fully like felt like I threw myself into, and I would daydream that one day I would be able to interview the members of Girls' Generation from like for like a like web show or like a television program or something like that. And obviously I knew that wasn't actually going to happen. Like, I didn't actually have the desire to make that into a reality for me. Like, I wasn't gonna, you know, go to South Korea to try to infiltrate their industry or anything like that. But somehow, it all wrapped up neatly with Non-Sweet. I kind of got to fulfill this, like, childhood daydream of mine, unexpectedly. As I was watching Stella, Nina, Jessica, and Kenzie say their farewells to Emily and Miyu, I had gone into the performance with the full expectation that I was going to cry. Surprisingly, I didn't. But instead, what happened was I had an even harder, visceral, emotional reaction to whenever I watch my favorite idols over in, like, you know, like in Hinatazaka or something like that graduate. Every single time a member of Hinatazaka 46 graduates, I cry a little bit, even if they're not my favorite member. I wouldn't have expected to not cry at Parallel Reflection, but instead to have a whole new different feeling, which was the sense that my heart was literally breaking watching these members say goodbye to their friends and coworkers, feeling my chest tighten and feeling myself needing to take a breath whenever I watched the tears glittering and dancing in Emily's eyes, when I watched Miyu hiding from behind her bouquet of flowers because she didn't want to show that she was crying on stage. I never thought that I would have those feelings, and I'm grateful that I did. Non-Sweet, this is gonna be like so like whoa out of nowhere, but you gotta understand. If you are not an idol fan, I'm gonna make you try to understand. With Non-Sweet, my experiences as an idol fangirl have not only come full circle, but they have been even more than that. I've had the wonderful opportunity of being able to work with all five original members through this program, and I have had the full life cycle experience of falling in love with this group, meeting them, and then saying goodbye to their members. And I would have never thought that I would have been able to do that in my life with any group. And it is such a blessing, such a feeling. I have this deep feeling of a gratitude to know that I was able to have this full circle experience. Because I love idols so much. Like you don't understand. Like, they are incredible to me. They're mind-boggling to me. I'm endlessly fascinated with them. I am endlessly in admiration and awe of them. What they put themselves through, how hard they work, all of that emotional labor that goes into being an idol, and then all that physical, actual labor that goes into being an idol, and they're doing all of this independently. Incredible. Amazing. So I'm really grateful to have had this experience of going to Parallel Reflection. I may have not been able to say hello and goodbye to every single member of Non-Sweet, unfortunately, because it was busy that day. But just knowing that I was able to experience something like that is so cool, so exciting to me. So Miyu is going to be, from here on out, she is continuing her career in the creative industries, I think. You can still support her if you're interested in following her as a public figure. Emily is no longer going to be a public figure. She has retired from being an idol and from being a performer. And the future that is in store for the rest of the non-suite members, Jessica, Stella, and Nina, is that they're going to be taking a break this summer, and later on in the year, they're going to be coming back with an all-new concept, all-new songs, all-new outfits, and so on. And so I'm excited for all of them. I'm excited to see what Miu's going to be doing next. She's so creative, so ambitious. She's so full of dreams and an incredible storyteller. I'm excited for Emily. She's going to be living a completely different type of life now, but I know it's one that she has wanted to pursue for quite a long time and knew that it was time for her to pursue. And of course, the remaining three members of Non-Suite, I'm going to be here. I'll be waiting patiently, and I cannot wait to see what the future of Non-Suite is going to look like. Wow, being an idol fan is really such a whirlwind. If you have not considered getting into idols yet, what are you doing? Go check out some of Non-Suite's music and their performances. You can check them out online. There's a lot of performances that people have uploaded on the internet. But also, their album Wake Up is available for streaming. Go check that out. And listen to our previous interviews, plural, with them on the CJSF archive. Here's more music. This is The Land Keeper, the newest from Men I Trust. Enjoy.
Sun. This is Bird Note. Birds' songs and calls convey lots of messages, from "this is my territory" to "I'm looking for a mate" to "there's a predator nearby." But did you know that some bird songs contain secret messages? Like this sweet singing eastern bluebird. Bluebirds benefit from people setting up homes for them in the spring. In fact, when you reverse that song, you can hear
"nest boxes set up, nest boxes."
Oh, those little scamps. Or this familiar cry of the Canada goose. If we play that backwards,
geese see God, geese see God.
Huh. I guess that one's a bit more of a thinker. And of course, the tricky blue jay. Play that in reverse, and you get
April Fools. April Fools.
Learn more about the incredible and real abilities of birds at our website, birdnote.org.
I'm Mark Ramhill.
Where do we begin to learn what love is? How to love? I mean, that's part of what I think is the magic of Sharon's book, is that really it has a lot of how-to work in it. In many ways, it's a workbook, it's a handy book, because we don't know what to do. You know, I remember trying to tell my young love girl at the time, who seemed not to comprehend love. I wrote on a little postcard thing, you know, love is a combination of six ingredients: care, commitment, knowledge, responsibility, respect, and trust. And so if you don't know what you're doing, just pull out that little card and ask yourself, in what way does my action that I'm taking reflect these traits, these characteristics, these values, if you will? And so that I think, again, the question of love is the question of what to do.
That was Love After Death by Backwash, off of her latest record, Only Dust Remains, here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. Hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you enjoyed listening to today's program as well. Thank you for tuning in. Tune in to more great CJSF programming by checking out Bitcoover every Tuesday from 8 to 10 o'clock. It's Vancouver's only chiptune radio broadcast, and it's always a good time with DJ Lately. Check it out Tuesdays from 8 to 10. We're going to listen to one final song for the playlist now. It's a little bit of an older one, but I love it. I hope you love it as well. This is Midnight by Tallies. I hope you have a good rest of the day. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. And I will talk to you very soon.